Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Magdalena by Candy Sari. Narrated by Jennifer Pickens. No live organism can continue for long to exist sanely under conditions of absolute reality. Even larks and katydids are supposed, by some, to dream. Shirley Jackson. Prologue. In my dream, they're both still with me, the girl and the ghost. Their presence is so strong, something inside of me, even in sleep, awakens. I watch from above and see myself on my living room couch, a slender woman with the kind of sloping shoulders that come with being too tall. Thin hair, pale skin, I'm not much to look at. There's a 15-year-old girl sitting beside me with long, thick hair, warm brown skin, and the kind of confidence that comes with being born beautiful. Somewhere between us is the ghost only the girl can see and I distinctly feel. Nothing happens in my dream. The ghost doesn't move things around the house anymore. The girl doesn't busy herself with her phone anymore. We just sit together as if understanding it's only a dream. And maybe if we stay still enough, we can hold on to this miraculous time together again. While there appears to be no change in the scene for the entire length of the dream, by the end, I notice my shoulders have risen up. I'm sitting tall, the way the girl sits. It's only a slight difference in my appearance, but I'm struck by how unusual it looks on me. While the girl and I share few physical characteristics, our silhouettes now resemble each other. It's as if once someone has come into your life and made an imprint, it can change the very shape of you. When I wake, I don't feel changed anymore. Not here in this sad room where they've put me. I prefer the lights out so I don't have to see what I've become. I just want to close my eyes and fall back to sleep and dream again about the girl and the ghost and how we were before I lost them. 1. Magdalena once told me she knew how to cure sadness. She read on that little phone of hers that we all need 15 minutes of sun every day, and without it, depression could set in. Those of us here on the peninsula barely get 15 minutes a week. The fog comes in over the cliffs in the morning, creeping through town, shrouding all neighborhoods with a thick graveyard effect. We don't have an actual graveyard, but the landslide all those years ago took enough lives and left enough ghosts behind to bring on that kind of fog. If it does lift around mid-morning, a heavy cloud cover still stays most of the day, keeping things gray. I'd always thought my sadness came from the unfortunate things that happened in my life, but according to Magdalena, my gloom might simply be a lack of vitamin D. From the day she got the phone, she stared into it constantly, seeking answers to all of her questions, and even finding new questions she would have never thought of on her own. She fed on its information like meat. "Mushrooms," Magdalena said. "We need to eat mushrooms." The girl was my only visitor. When she spoke, I hung on her every word. "If we eat enough of them, we'll get the vitamin D we're missing from the sun." I didn't question her. For weeks, I based all my meals around mushrooms. I made mushroom casseroles, salads, risotto, soups, but I'm not sure it changed me. I'm not sure it changed her. How many mushrooms would it take to replace the sun? I wish I could ask the girl, but she's gone. 3 weeks ago, I lost her for good. I pull up my sleeves and roll up my pants. My arms and legs are so pale in the light. They look like white maps with long blue roads leading to nowhere. The lighting in my house is soft enough to disguise my pallor, but here in the rest home, the deficiency is glaring. I quickly lower my sleeves and pants again. "Focus, Dottie." My command is quiet. I swallow down one of the tiny white pills and sit up straight in my chair. Pen in hand, I look around the dismal room I currently share with Mario. It is a holding cell for the dying. We aren't dying like the old people in this nursing home, but our town is small. They had nowhere else to put my husband after the accident a decade ago, and they had nowhere else to put me after the devastating incident at my house last week. So now we live together again in room 11 with the beige walls, the brown and yellow floral comforters on our beds, and the slim, darkwood secretary desk beside the bathroom door. The old desk is where I currently sit as I tap my pen on the blank page, trying to gather my thoughts. Now the cold distracts me. I pull a blanket from the bed and wrap it around me. The air conditioner is dreadfully high. They say it's to keep germs down, but I sometimes wonder if they're trying to weed out the weakest of us. Focus, Dottie, focus, I say a little louder, closing my eyes. What do you need to focus on? Someone asks. Startled, I tighten the blanket around me and turn toward the voice. There is a white-haired lady in a wheelchair at my door. Her face is all wrinkled up like fingertips after a long bath, and her lips seem to be growing inward around her teeth. Thick bifocals wrapped around her head like goggles magnify her wet and cloudy eyes. There are some really old people here, but she has to be the oldest. I didn't mean to frighten you, she says, her ancient voice slowly rattling out the words. I heard you from the hall. I wasn't trying to be heard. I place my hand over my mouth to show her I've no interest in a conversation. I'm hoping my hand gesture will make her leave, but it doesn't. Instead, she wheels through the small space between the two beds and parks next to me at the desk. Her nightgown is purple and far too big on her. She smells like leftover broccoli. I'm curious. What do you need to focus on? She asks again. It's going to take some time getting used to this place. I'm not in the habit of answering to anyone, having lived alone for so long. A letter, I finally say. She's so close now, there's no escaping her. I'm writing a letter. A story, really. The rumors are terrible, and I catch myself before it all comes flooding back. Their ugly words. All the lies. I need to tell my story. It's the only way to get the truth out. Her face lights up. You must be Dottie, she whispers. I nod. I should have known. Her eyes travel the length of me. I heard about you, the young woman living in the old people's home. It sounds strange out loud, but worse things have been said about me. How old are you, dear? 43. So young. She shakes her head. It's just awful what happened to you. How long will you be staying with us? Well, I look over at Mario in his bed. His eyes are open, but there's no telling what he's thinking as he stares at the ceiling tiles. The sisters say I can stay with my husband as long as I need. I've nowhere else to go. She leans over the side of her chair to get a closer look at him. Does he even remember who you are? I haven't let a day go by without coming to see him. But with what happened to him, do you think he can remember? Oh, he remembers me. I won't let anyone convince me otherwise. That's nice. Her smile is kind. Sometimes I think I remember too much, she says. Some things I wish I could forget. But the pictures are there in my mind, clear as day. She sets her bony hands in her lap and the veins bulge like soft worms. She smiles. Her demeanor is pleasant. It's just the broccoli smell that's bothersome. I notice a pin on her nightgown. It's gold with blue letters spelling out centenarian. I point to it. You're 100? 102. That's incredible, I say. Feeling a new respect for her. She's not just an old lady, she's National Geographic material. It's a curse, old age. The lucky ones die young. Freed from these bodies, they can move on. Or, of course, they can stick around. She raises the few hairs left of her eyebrows, as if I know something about this. I feel her words in my stomach. I don't respond. she whispers. The ghosts of Sam's town are persistent, aren't they, Dottie? If you don't mind, I'd like to get back to my letter. But we haven't talked about what happened to the girl yet. She laces her fingers together under her chin. We need to talk about what really happened to Magdalena. Hearing her name almost makes me lose my breath. I close my eyes and indiscriminate memories resurface. Her blue nail polish, the stolen sunglasses on her head, lemon juice dripping from her fingers, her blood on the linoleum. Do you know what happened? The old woman asks. I mean, what really happened to her? She's staring at me, waiting for an answer. I reach for my pen, gripping it like a weapon. Until I write it all down, I'm not talking about it to anyone. You can trust me, Dottie. She wheels closer. I don't even know you, I say. She smiles. It's a sad smile. Then let's get to know one another. She glances toward my husband before leaning forward. The smell is strong. Her voice is soft. Is it true that the man, she asks, who started it all was your lover? I close my eyes again to escape her question, but now there he is behind my eyelids. Benjamin. His hand creeps under my dress and he's massaging my leg. I squeeze my eyes tighter. Go away! I shout. Go away! I am talking to Benjamin, but when I open my eyes, the old lady in the wheelchair is hunched over, wheeling away as fast as her bony arms will take her. I should explain that I was not yelling at her, but I don't. I stay quiet. While I feel a bit guilty, I'm relieved to see her go. The poor woman looks so frail heading for the door, like her arms might snap. That's the other effect of vitamin D deficiency. Frail bones. This town is killing all of us. 2. The old lady in the wheelchair is gone, but the room still smells like her. I press the red button on the wall beside my bed. Yes? A voice comes through the speaker. I had a visitor in my room, and she left a smell. It's distracting. Can you bring some kind of deodorizer to get rid of it? There is a moment of silence. I wonder if I haven't made my problem clear. It smells like broccoli, I say. Not freshly cooked broccoli, but broccoli going bad. It was the centenarian lady, probably just gas, but it's not going away. All right, Dottie, the voice crackles through the speaker. I hear someone laughing in the background. It must be one of the high school volunteers, still immature enough to laugh at flatulence. I'll send someone over right away. A young man shows up with pine saw spray and douses my room. A quick misting would have solved the problem. Now I'm stuck in the overwhelming stench of imitation pine. Did you use the whole can? I ask him. No, there's still some left. You want me to spray more? No, I say quickly. You've done enough. Oh, too much? Sorry. He rapidly moves the door back and forth as if that might clear the air. It only makes it worse. I can't write my letter in here. For the first time since I moved in with Mario a week ago, I leave our room. Today's unexpected visitor, the one who came before the centenarian, brought word that someone wants to hear my version of the story. Someone wants me to write down everything that really happened. This request has turned my life upside down, or rather, right side up. I thought the truth would slowly disappear as the townspeople traded ugly tales about me. But now, this opportunity has arisen to dispel the rumors. Of course, I'm afraid to tell the truth. It isn't pretty, but at least it shows I am human, not the monster they believe me to be. I should not care what the people of Sam's town think of me anymore. They've misunderstood me since I was a young girl. As a child, I loved spending time in my imagination. Sometimes I used the stories I found there to replace the real stories of my life. Like the night my mother left my bedroom window open after climbing out of it to go clear her head. She'd gone through my room so my father wouldn't notice. I told my classmates I left my window open that night to listen to the dolphins and the whales plan a birthday party for a mermaid. I don't know where those silly stories came from, but they thrilled me, and I thought sharing them would thrill the other kids just as much. I was wrong. I spent lunchtime in Sister Rosario's office when the teasing got bad. Even when I stopped telling stories and eventually stopped talking at school altogether, they continued making fun of me. Their unkind treatment has haunted me all my life, and yet here I am, a grown woman, still hopeful that maybe this time they will understand me. Like it's a necessity. Food, water, air, understanding. I grab my robe and slippers to keep warm in this meat locker of a place and head for the door. The mirror on the wall catches me. I stop and touch the reflection. I see my mother's worried eyes and nervous lips. I wear my father in my pale complexion and light brown hair. I'm skinny like my mother, tall like my father. Even my fingertips hold memories of them. The tiny scars are like mother's signature on me. My parents left town years ago, yet they still creep up on me every now and then. I quickly pull my hands from the mirror and wave their ghosts away. Stepping from my dimly lit room into the hall, I found the overhead fluorescence piercing. The people in the hall look strange, overexposed like a bad photograph. Glossy, lentil green floors match the green and beige striped wallpaper. Framed images of the Virgin Mary hang on the walls. These paintings might have an uplifting effect on the old place, if not for the sad, elderly people parked beside them, drowsing and drooling in their wheelchairs. There's nowhere they can socialize except the dining room, and it's closed while the staff is preparing lunch and dinner. It feels like I've been passing the same folks for almost 10 years now, although I'm sure some have died and new ones have replaced them. They always look the same. I've tried keeping to myself when I visit Mario, but some are hard to ignore. Old Buck Donenfeld, one of the original fishermen who founded Samstown, usually keeps a patch over his missing eye, though sometimes he likes to air it out while lounging in his wheelchair. Henry Smith lost 3 fingers in an accident at sea and has a habit of rubbing his nubs over his lips while watching the happenings in the hall. Gigi Flowers, once an aspiring actress who used to take a bus to Hollywood auditions, keeps what she has left of her white hair all fluffed up and wears pink lipstick drawn out beyond her lips. She scoots along in her walker telling stories to anyone who will listen. Frail old Natalie Teller, with steel gray hair and a rash all over her skin, laughs, cries, argues, or chants, "Oh, no," over and over, depending on what the voices in her head are telling her. It's an eerie place. The rotating doctors see that people are properly medicated. The 3 sisters from church, who are also trained nurses, do their best to keep the place clean and respectable. But there's nothing anyone can do about the side effects and indignities of growing old. At the end of the hall, I slip into the small chapel. It is a dark room with heavy curtains, lit mostly by candlelight. Not real candles, a fire hazard, but the flameless kind that run on batteries. A life-size Virgin Mary statue stands on a carpeted base against the wall, and a few wooden benches face the makeshift altar. Most of the room is left open for wheelchairs. I stay in the back corner where there is a desk with a lamp. The room is empty right now except for one man, asleep in his wheelchair beside the Virgin. His open-mouthed breathing drills into my ears, but I've brought the earplug Sister Rosario gave me when I first arrived, in case residents scream in the middle of the night. Sitting at the desk with my blank paper, I put in the earplugs and begin to write. "Dear Ms. McIntosh," I write, addressing my favorite journalist at Beyond the Veil magazine. She believes the things that happened to me would intrigue her readers, and she wants to hear my story, my version of it. Everyone in town reads the magazine. This is my chance to explain myself and convince them of my innocence. I admit I've done some terrible things, but I swear on my life, I swear to all my accusers, I did nothing to harm Magdalena. 3. My letter starts out like a confession. I tell Susan McIntosh how I met Benjamin at the library in Norwood, how I took the bus there at least 3 days a week, and we sat in room B, enclosed by windows, not walls, reading out loud together, each taking 5 pages at a time. I lived for those days. It had been about a decade since the accident. A traumatic brain injury left Mario a vegetable. A vegetable, that was the term the doctors used, reducing my once vibrant husband to a head of cabbage. I resented the insensitivity, but over the long years I came to understand my husband was no more responsive to me than the produce I bought at Dorado's Market. Even in such a hopeless condition, I'd never had any intention to replace him. I visited him in the rest home every day, and despite being in my early 30s, I tucked away any desires that surfaced in my still young body and never looked at other men. Romance novels seemed to satiate me, but now I understand I read far too many. My brain was filled with romance, keeping those youthful hormones alive. Following a decade of faithfulness, I finally gave in to temptation. It began innocently enough between us. Two readers at the library who asked for the same book on the same night. With only one copy available, he suggested we share it. Asking how we might do that, he led me to room B, and the reading began. Benjamin looked like he had ancestors from every country. His dark, frizzy hair puffed out when it was short, but fell softly against his shoulders when it grew longer. Tawny skin, deep-set eyes, full lips, and a pointed nose, he was breathtakingly original. He was tall and appeared rather lean under his baggy clothes. Though pleasing to look at, his most attractive feature was his confidence. The outside world might have had a hard time defining him, but he clearly knew who he was. We were on page 42 that first night together, when I abruptly stood up and straightened my house dress. "I need to go," I told him. I was enjoying myself far too much with this stranger. "Can we meet here again?" he asked. His eyes, his smile, the tilt of his head. It was all too dreamy for a simple woman like me. "No, I don't think I can," I said, lowering my eyes and staring down at the beige carpet. "You take the book home. I'll read it when you're done." "Ah, but it won't be the same." He spoke passionately, a bit too loud. I peeked out the window, but no one seemed to have heard. "It was like a duet," he said, "the two of us reading together. Didn't you enjoy hearing it in alternating voices like that?" Keeping my head down, I nodded. "Then can you come Thursday or Friday?" I looked back up at him. "I don't know." "Okay." He widened that charming smile. "I'll be here Thursday and Friday. If you decide to come, I'll be waiting." Wednesday, I told myself I would not go. Thursday, I told myself I should be polite and go back to tell Benjamin I couldn't meet with him so he wouldn't waste his time showing up again on Friday. That was my mistake. Trying to be polite. I write to Susan about how he stood so close to me that day I could smell him. His scent was clean and strong and somehow deeper than my husband's. Benjamin smelled like nighttime. It's what made me want to stay and continue our reading, and what made me agree to meet again. I went back to the library to see him again and again in the following months. We grew more comfortable together than we should have. Benjamin held my hand as we read Stephen King novels so I wouldn't get scared, and sometimes while reading love scenes, he put his hand on my bare leg, just under the hem of my dress. We never met in a bedroom, but being together inside a story had its own fever. We never talked about our real lives. He wore a wedding ring like I did, but the fact that he showed up every week told me all I needed to know. We mostly gave our attention to the characters in the books we read, and through them we developed something as passionate as a regular affair. Desire grew between us. It was a good thing there was no privacy in room B for us to do anything about it. Sometimes, as I read, Benjamin leaned in toward me to smell my hair. After a deep inhale, I could hear his breath grow heavy, as if my smell triggered his heart to race. In response, my own heart would speed up and make me stutter while reading. His gentle hand on my shoulder, or his soft finger touching my lips, was his way of telling me it was okay to stop for a moment. In the quiet, while we waited for our hearts to calm, he would gaze at me with that dreamy look of his. I never thought I had it in me to cheat on my husband. But sometimes life throws a Benjamin at you, and you can't help but rethink never. After a year-long relationship, living through all those novels together, Benjamin stopped showing up. We were in the middle of The Shining, and I knew he was as curious to know the ending as I was. For months, I waited for him to return, visiting the library every day, sitting alone in room B with the windows instead of walls, half reading and half watching for him. But he never returned. It was all I could think about. He'd given no hint he was tiring of me. In fact, the last time we met, he sat especially close and told me our time together was the highlight of his week. Why would he give that up? I came up with several possible reasons for his disappearance, but only one struck me with that intuitive feeling one gets when the truth suddenly reveals itself. Benjamin must have died. He must have. Once I came to this revelation, I made it my obsession to find Benjamin on the other side. Living in Samstown, I knew death didn't mean the end. Mario's Ouija board was in a box in the back of the garage. He and his friends used it when they were kids. I'd never used one. If another ghost showed up in our house, my mother would have had an honest-to-goodness breakdown. My father kept sage smudge sticks in the same cupboard with the roach spray. Ghosts and roaches never had a chance in our house. They were my mother's two greatest fears. The kids at school bragged about their Ouija board experiences, but I equated playing with one to playing with matches on the carpet. When Mario and I got married and brought our things together, I told him he wasn't allowed to bring the evil game inside. Loneliness has a way of changing your mind about things. Pushing aside the boxes at the back of the garage, I searched for the board game that seemed far less evil now that I had use for it. Late at night, I sat on the floor in my living room, with the Ouija board on the coffee table and a lamp lit by the draped window. I called out for Benjamin to come back. Each night I asked him to speak to me through the lettered board as my hopeful fingertips hovered over the planchette. It was exciting to finally engage in ghost business after all my years of avoiding it. Surprisingly, I felt no guilt. My mother was no longer in town, so I couldn't hurt her with this. It was time to take care of myself. Every day for 2 weeks straight, I called for Benjamin. The planchette slid along the arched alphabet of the magic board, stopping now and then as if a message was trying to come through. But what sometimes felt like guided movement only turned into a jumble of letters. Nothing ever made sense. I wondered if I was doing something wrong. As a last resort, I simply set the Ouija board on my kitchen table, an open invitation to Benjamin. It took up a lot of space, but I was okay with that. The table was where I might entertain a dinner guest, and the only possible guest I could hope for was Benjamin. I went back to my ordinary routine. All the while, I did my best to wear a smile, but it was getting harder. Though losing Benjamin wouldn't have been the worst of my losses, suffering one heartbreak after another felt like a gradual tumble down a cliff. I was about to crash into the ground when the unexpected happened. Benjamin came through. 4. My letter is 5 pages long already, and I still haven't told Susan McIntosh about the girl. I set my pen down and close my eyes. Magdalena. I'm afraid ink and paper are not enough for this. If only I'd taken a picture of her while she was still here, or captured some video to remember the way she moved through the world, but I have nothing. Just the story.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?